Whether you are starting a business or running a business, maybe you're producing a podcast like The Kara Golden Show. Let's face it, it's always way harder than one might expect. Lots of little details, meticulous planning, producing product, guest coordination, editing, promoting each episode. It's all a ton of work. Managing merchandise, managing cases and book sales too, layer after layer of complexity. And if you're like me, looking for ways to operate more efficiently and effectively is the name of the game. That's why I'm going to let you in on a little secret. ShipStation, the tool that is here to help you, and you need to know all about it. With ShipStation, you can integrate with all the places you sell online, optimize your shipping, save costs and time. Personally, ShipStation has been a lifesaver for me. Its automation features allow me to manage orders from anywhere and print shipping labels with just a click. Seriously, it's that easy. And the cost savings? Unbelievable. With discounts up to 89% off carrier rates, you can't go wrong. Significant savings. And who doesn't want that? An easy-to-use dashboard, robust reporting. Oh, and did I mention that over 130,000 companies have leveraged ShipStation to grow their businesses? Not much churn either. 98% of them stay with ShipStation because it truly works. ShipStation is it. So if you're ready to streamline your shipping process and focus more on what you love, head over to ShipStation.com, the innovative tool that helps turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code KARA to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code KARA. Use code KARA for a free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, promo code KARA.
You have to trust the process of letting your career path show itself and then having the courage to give it a try and find champions along the way that will help support you on that journey.
I am unwilling to give up, that I will start over from scratch as many times as it takes to get where I want to be.
You just want to make sure you will get knocked down, but just make sure you don't get knocked out.
So your only choice should be go focus on what you can control.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kara Golden Show. Join me each week for inspiring conversations with some of the world's greatest leaders. We'll talk with founders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and really some of the most interesting people of our time. Can't wait to get started. Let's go. Hi, everyone. It's Kara Golden from The Kara Golden Show. And I'm so excited to have my next guest here. I was actually on her podcast and talking about my book. And I am really, really honored that she agreed to come on my podcast to talk about her book, which is a couple years old, but it is so incredible. If you have not read it, I absolutely loved it. But let's get to who this guest is, Tiffany Bova. She is a business anthropologist, growth and transformation advisor, keynote speaker, best-selling author, and chief global growth evangelist at that little company called Salesforce. So honored to have you here, Tiffany. I'm going to give you a few accolades here before I actually allow you to talk, just to embarrass you a little bit. So, chief growth evangelist at Salesforce and the author of the Wall Street Journal best-selling book, Growth IQ, Get Smarter About the Choices That Will Make or Break Your Business. She's been included on the Thinkers 50 list of the world's top management thinkers, among other things. She also hosts that great podcast called What's Next? Such a good podcast. If you haven't heard it, definitely download it. And let's see, what else? She's a top Twitter influencer in business growth, customer experience, innovation, and sales. So definitely follow her there. And she's been named one of Inc. magazine's 37 sales experts you need to follow on Twitter, a top 100 women in tech, and one of the most powerful and influential women in California, according to the National Diversity Council. So welcome, Tiffany.
No, thank you, Kara, for having me. Whenever my parts of my bio get read, I always say, I wish my mom could hear this because she thinks I don't do much.
I know, right? It's I hear you. Well, you definitely have, and very, very exciting. So where did the story begin? I know where the story began, but I want to hear it from you. Where did the story begin for Tiffany?
Well, I was blessed to have been born and raised in Hawaii, which I am, 54 years old. So you can imagine being a kid traveling to the mainland and saying you're from Hawaii and you'd get this, do you guys live in houses? Like, do you have phones?
Yeah.
Right? Because it was just completely this unknown, islands in the middle of the Pacific that was part of the United States that not many people had gotten an opportunity to travel and visit to. So it was an amazing place to be from for so many reasons, but most of which was around the cultural experience I had being raised in Hawaii. You know, it's the only place in the U.S. that had a king and a queen. We had a monarchy. There's a lot of deep, rich culture in the Hawaiian Islands. As well, it has a very large APAC population. So I was the minority. And so it gave me a very different perspective on life and on sort of what our role is on the planet. And so, it's really just a great story for where it all began for me.
You talked about moving over to the mainland. So how did you end up moving over? What was the pull?
Outside of the fact that my mom said, you need to get out of the house. Besides that, I wanted to work and found that I was pretty good at sales and marketing. And then I accidentally stumbled into technology. And so once I realized that that was the career I wanted to pursue, it was difficult for me to do it in Hawaii at the time, because obviously most business was happening in the mainland, mm-hmm. In the sort of the continental U.S. But when I first moved, I was just about 30. I was going back and forth. And so I always kept Hawaii in my sales territory so I could go home, and everyone would be like,
I love it.
You're really the only rep who's ever been successful in Hawaii. And it was because I knew everybody. I either went to high school with them or grew up with them, or it was my friend's parents. So I was able to be fairly successful flying back and forth. And then when I finally really had to not make Hawaii part of my territory, I kind of moved full time, if you will, but still have my house there and I go home as often as I can.
That's awesome. Which island?
Oahu.
Very, very, very cool. So you seem fearless, and I think you are pretty fearless. But I would also how did you gain the confidence to just go and kind of do what you're doing today?
I would say that anybody listening to this who played sports as a child will agree, I think. Mm-hmm. It was really through my athletics. I was an only child, and so it was my sort of outlet of being around other kids because I didn't have siblings to sort of play with.
How often have you thought about learning a new language only to be stopped by that memory of yours from the last time you tried to learn a language when it didn't go so well? Okay, maybe it wasn't a language that you were interested in learning, or perhaps all those poorly written textbooks in your sixth grade class weren't that well written after all. I have a great tip for you. It's called Rosetta Stone. Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program around, available on desktop or app. No matter where you choose to learn it or what platform you choose to learn on, Rosetta Stone works, and it truly immerses you in the language you choose to learn, quicker and easier than you ever imagined to. Maybe you're getting ready to travel abroad this summer and you want to learn a bit of Portuguese, let's say, before your trip. Rosetta Stone can help. I know this firsthand as I did just this before traveling to Portugal last year. I learned Portuguese through Rosetta Stone, and by doing so, I not only got a better grasp of the spoken language of Portugal, but it got me very excited for the trip itself before I went. They even have a true accent feature that gives you feedback on your pronunciation as you are learning too. They've got you covered. Rosetta Stone's trusted experts are the real deal. They've been helping people just like you for over 30 years, helping millions of people to learn Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Japanese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, and my favorite, Portuguese. The lessons are 5 to 10 minutes long and include practical exercises so that you can pick up the language naturally, first with words, then phrases, then sentences. No English translations either, so you really learn to speak, listen, and think in the language you are focused on, helping you get the long-term retention you are looking for. And who wouldn't want that? Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a very limited time, the Kara Golden Show listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today today. Thinking about what's for dinner, but you haven't had a minute to even think about it before now? Well, let's not make that mistake again. I have a tip for you. Factor. Stress-free, delicious, ready-to-eat meals, just perfect for spring and summer yumminess. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options: keto, vegan, veggie, or calorie smart. Factor has you covered. Discover more than 60 add-ons every week, too, like breakfast and on-the-go lunch choices. Snacks and beverages now, too. Stay fueled and feel good all day long with whatever they are creating over at Factor for you. And the best part? Each meal is ready to eat in just 2 minutes or less. And who wouldn't want that? Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. Get started today and fuel up for your spring and summer goals. What are you waiting for? Head to factormeals.com/golden50 and use code golden50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active. That's code golden50 at factormeals.com/golden50 to get 50% off plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
And I had a ton of energy. So my mom was like, play any sport and every sport you can possibly play and do. And I did my whole life, you know, sort of 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, and then all the way through to college. And it taught me, you know, how to lose with my, you know, head held high, and how to win with humility, and mm-hmm. how to work on teams, how to, you know, follow leadership and coaches, and have people give you hard constructive criticism, some of which is, this is just not your sport. Mm-hmm. Like, pick another one. You know, and as you're 13, you're like, oh my God, my world is over. And so I'd say that fearlessness comes from my athletic background, but it is a confidence that even if I fail, I can dust myself off and get back up. And so I think that was a really great lesson from sports. And there was some stat out the other day that I tweeted that it was like 75% of women in leadership roles were an athlete, you know? And so that just says a lot. And so when I see people not able to work together as teams, I always want to, you know, if I could just sort of go, how many of you played sports as kids? Because
so true.
You just see their inability to navigate that push and pull of it. We are all going in the same direction. And if one breaks off or splinters off, the team does not win. So I'd say that's probably where it came from. And my mom was a single mom raising me. And so she is fearless. And so I think she taught me as well.
I love that. That's so great. And you saw strength, I'm sure. And just having that, you know, growing up in that environment.
Absolutely. And my mom was a teacher. So, you know, I was average middle-class kid, right? That was raised by a teacher, and I was not a great student. So that was always difficult for my mom. But I think that her ability to be, you know, around sort of kids that were my age, she realized that I wasn't all that bad.
Yeah.
That, you know, I was going to sort of work it out and figure it out. So I'd say that's probably key, those two things.
It's so funny. My dad had one rule, and he had some other rules along the way, but he had one rule in our house for, I was the last of five kids, and that was we had to play sports. And so I often talk about, I was a gymnast and I ran but there were certain times a year where we were taking a break and the teams were taking a break. And so I was forced to play softball, and I was a terrible softball player. And I always talk about, you know, something that you mentioned, humility, and how humor, actually, I was still pulled into a bunch of these teams because I just knew how bad I was. And, you know, people would want me on their team because I was just funny. Like I would just, and I didn't think I was that funny, but I would make fun of myself while everybody else was really trying to be serious. I would try, but it just wasn't my deal. And yet I was good at running and gymnastics. And anyway, I just think it's something where there's so many things, to your point, where I look back on and, you know, I know that you're never going to be the greatest at everything you do. And you got to get back up again after you've fallen, and all of those really key things. I think I totally agree. And particularly for female executives, I've seen that they always played a sport. I mean, maybe there's one or two out there, but it really is true that, you know, it seems to be this consistent thread, some kind of sport along the way. So really, really interesting. So you get to Salesforce. How did this happen?
Oh, you know, I often get asked this question, and my career path was, I went to a state school. I went to Arizona State. I don't have my MBA. I don't have my undergrad in business either.
Woo, Arizona State. Yep. You know, yeah, we both went
at the
there.
Same
yeah,
time.
Yeah, I know, which is just crazy.
We had a little overlap, I think 2 years, right? I was 84 to 88.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yep, a little bit of an overlap.
Yeah.
But so I guess my college counselor, guidance counselor, it's kind of the middle end of my sophomore year, you know, called me in and said, hey, we need to rethink your undergraduate degree. We don't really think that business is your thing.
Great. Just what you want to hear, right?
Yeah, that's what I want to hear. And so every time I get a little notice in the mail of, you know, hey, donate to the Alumni Association, I'm like, all the money I make is from business. Yeah. But I kind of realized that the school of doing was where I had learned most of my lessons. So one of my best friends growing up, her mom was one of the first female presidents of YPO, ran a $1 million business. And like, I wanted to be her, right? So she was sort of who I looked up to. And at 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, to about 22, I worked for them, and she gave me a ton of responsibility and spent a ton of time teaching me things like supply chain and sales and marketing and, you know, cash and hiring and training and firing and all kinds of things. And so when I got to college and I was learning it in a book, I was like, I don't, and of course at 19, you think you know everything, but I was like, that's kind of not how it really works. Mm-hmm. So I disengaged, which is why, you know, I didn't sort of pursue that. But I realized I was really good at kind of sales and marketing. And so when I found technology as a way that I could be successful and use my superpowers, then I kind of started on the journey of working for tech companies, small startups. And then, you know, one of my last jobs was running a division of Gateway Computers, if you remember the Holstein pattern boxes. Sure. And then I went on to, so I ran sort of sales service, customer service and marketing. And then I worked for a company that was named Gartner, which is the largest analyst and consulting firm in the world, advising companies all over about how to sell better, use digital technologies to engage and marketing and all of that. And I didn't know that that was my next superpower that I had to uncover, which was being able to distill lots of data points and trends and be able to give that as actionable advice to executives that were making massive decisions for, you know, small brands and $1 billion brands. And so I did that for a decade and decided that I wanted to try something else. And Salesforce came along and said, hey, we'd love for you to continue doing what you're doing, but we'd love for you to do it for us and for our clients and, you know, really go out there and be a voice for the market. And, you know, how do you say no to that? I think it's an amazing company and
amazing
brand. And, yeah, doing just, you know, more than just selling software. So, it was not a straight line journey. It was definitely up and down and backwards and forwards. But I usually tell people that you have to trust the process of letting your career path show itself, and then having the courage to give it a try and find champions along the way that will help support you on that journey.
That's amazing. How long have you been at Salesforce?
In March this year, it will be 5 years.
Wow.
So last year was obviously a big blur, but it seems like it's been much shorter than that. It's been a great ride.
So your focus there is pretty unique. So Chief Global Growth Evangelist. How did you swing that? That just sounds like an amazing title. I mean, it's great. I mean, not just title, I should say. How did you like the focus of it? Because I know it's much more than a title. That's not fair. So it just seems so forward of Salesforce to be thinking even 5 years ago about the customer like that. I mean, it sounds crazy, but just actually what people are thinking about today more and more is really that the customer is in control and really driving this. And I think that's what I see in this. And they obviously picked you up because you knew so much about this. And it's a lot too about what you write about in the book. So do you want to jump in there and talk a little bit about the book and also just how that kind of goes hand in hand with what you do every day at work?
Yeah. So I'd say this, when I first joined, they gave me the opportunity to pick my title. So I tried to make it that the evangelist gives the feeling as if, I'm out sort of talking about the art of the possible, trying to inspire companies and executives to think differently about what they're doing in their business. Because I don't have P&L responsibility. I don't have a sales responsibility. I don't have a team of people. There's a handful of us that make up the team of evangelists. And we are really customer facing. And we take the opportunity to meet with customers and non-customers, right? Talking about trends, talking about what they're doing in their business. What are they challenged with? What are the opportunities? How are they overcoming things? And really looking for those patterns so that we can pull together a story of how can technology really help companies achieve the goals they're trying to achieve? And it can't just be the way that it used to be along the lines of what you were just saying. I got involved in the World Wide Web all the way back in 2000. I bought my first domain name, actually my name. I bought my name, domain name in 1997. So I've been on this journey on this thing called the internet for quite a while. Over the sort of 10 years prior to, the last 12 months, many companies were resistant to making these technology investments. They felt that it was more of a human engagement that they wanted with customers, that they were worried that technology would replace jobs, or it was too overwhelming. It was too complicated. They were a small business. They didn't need something like that. Then a pandemic hits and you literally see that the lack of investment in a lot of these things really hurt some small businesses and medium and large businesses. I'm just going to pick on the restaurant industry. Many restaurants, have reservations and people show up and they might show up every Thursday. And 99% of their business is people sitting in the restaurant. Boom, the pandemic hits. They don't know who their customers are. They don't have their menu online.
Sure.
They don't have any relationships to deliver food with a delivery service. They don't have any of the infrastructure available to them to keep the restaurant going if people aren't able to sit inside and eat.
Right.
And so being able to share that, how do you then take a brick and mortar business and allow it to go online and help you to be successful through something like a Black Swan event that we're in the middle of, that is the kind of investment that's accelerated over the last 12 months, regardless of what industry you're in. And so, it's been amazing to watch the resiliency of businesses during this time and feel like, in some small way, in a handful of companies, I've participated in that transformation and sort of that is exciting for me and inspiring for me to continue to tell this story, as widely and broadly as I can. And the book was one way I could continue that conversation, but it's being on the front lines and seeing how executives like yourself, Kara, right? How you say, I have Hint Water. What are the other product categories that my customer may want from me? And how do I expand into that and earn permission to do it? And what is true to my brand? Like those kinds of conversations to me are so exciting, right? Because you watch the wheels spin, and then it's like, well, how can technology help you achieve that? And that human and tech connection, I think, is just so powerful.
No, it's really forward thinking. So one of the things way back in the World Wide Web, back in even before 1997. So I was started there in 1994. And you know, it's funny, I worked for a little tiny little CD-ROM company, another word that we don't hear too often. And I was responsible for going out to all of these catalogers and people like Mickey Drexler at the Gap, and all of my friends, I'm in my 20s, and all of my pals are, you know, entry-level people at the Gap in San Francisco. And they're like, how the heck are you getting these meetings with Mickey Drexler, who was the CEO of Gap at the time? And it was because I was walking in and it, like a consultative sale. I mean, he wanted to figure out, how does he take the Gap online? And it was, you know, how does he figure out? I mean, they didn't do one-to-one ordering. I mean, there was just a lot. And so we ended up, I was sort of the lead on bringing in a team of people, and then America Online acquired us, and then I had more people to bring in, a lot of the reason why we were able to do what we were doing and ultimately get big clients like J.Crew and The Gap, some of them had back end, some of them didn't, was because we had this consultative sale, right? And we were ultimately like, okay, you got to go get this technology. Here's this person that you should talk to, whatever, if we didn't do that in-house. But I totally get, I mean, it's really smart, yet people don't invest in that typically. Large companies don't invest in it because they just think that's for the client to do. And I think that that's just so forward and so great that they got you to come in and do that. So that's super awesome. So let's specifically talk about the book. And what do you think, it's been out for a couple of years now, and it's gotten, you know, tons of bestseller notoriety. And what do you think are the key things that people are coming back to you and talking to you about the book that they're getting out of it?
Over the 10 years of me advising companies while working at Gartner about sort of achieving growth, mm-hmm. I realized that I would hear pretty consistently from the largest tech companies in the world to the smallest, is when growth got difficult, they would pull three levers: hire more salespeople, spend more marketing dollars, cut costs. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, it's easy, right? With every head I add from a selling perspective, I know I can make, you know, $1 million in 6 months in new sales. Or if I spend more marketing, the funnel will fill up, I'll sell more stuff. Or if I cut costs, I'll artificially grow the profit of the business. And I knew that it couldn't be just those three things. Like, I knew that there had to be more.
More.
Yeah. And so I had a unique opportunity because I was a practicing sales, marketing, and service leader who was also now playing an academic at work, right? Looking and analyzing lots and lots of companies. And over the course of a decade, I had 5,000 conversations with businesses around the world on these very conversations. And so when I started thinking about Growth IQ, I said, look, I don't want to actually reinvent the wheel and come up with a new, brand new framework and try to teach people that no, everything you've read before is not right. This is what's right. Instead, I approached it a little bit differently. I said, I am going to modernize the growth strategies that have been used for literally the last 100 years and have been written about in the best business books in the world. And I'm going to modernize them now with social, mobile, cloud, big data, artificial intelligence, AR, VR, you know, data warehousing, machine learning, robots, all the things we now have at our disposal. Changes, you know, if you look at the book Good to Great, like what was good and what made big brands great, would be different today because the context of the market is significantly different. It doesn't mean that management isn't still important, but technology is just as important, right? And the experience a customer has is just as important. So I modernized these growth levers that have been talked about for a very long time. And I think that had a lot to do with why the book was so well received, because I wasn't trying to create something new. I just said, let me sort of approach it a little bit differently. Now, the one thing that was really, I think the aha for me was throughout it, I used 30 stories to sort of tell my story. And that really helped. It resonated with people that could learn about what did Starbucks do, or John Deere, or Sephora, or Kylie Jenner, or, you know, the airlines, or whomever else, Red Bull. And those stories would draw people in instead of it being this 250-page sort of research readout, which is not that interesting. So I'd say the aha was on the timing of what businesses when they make decisions. So just going back to the conversation we just made, what is the right time to invest in technology? If you're listening to this and you're an entrepreneur and you have five people, should you be investing in technology now, or is it when you have 50 people? It's sort of, when do you hire your first salesperson?
Yeah.
When do you hire a full-time marketer? Like, those questions
are big.
That entrepreneurs ask are big. And mm-hmm. if you're medium-sized business, it's like, I have all these legacy systems. How do I rationalize, and what should I be investing in the future? And if I'm a large company, for all intent and purposes, most of them develop their own stuff. And so, I think it's relevant to so many people. And right now, the foundation of the book was about recovering from a growth stall. And now the globe is in a growth stall, except for certain key industries. So that's why I think, Kara, to your point, it's remained relevant. It's done very well over the last year. It's been published into 9 languages and sort of making its way around the world, because getting back to growth is what businesses are focused on today. Yeah.
Yeah. And you've talked before about getting back to growth. So during this time, do you see a huge stall all globally and people not really focusing on the growth aspect? I 100% agree with you. I think that the only way for us to move forward is to start innovating and start looking at these challenging times and what problems do we have, but also what solutions do we have to so many, issues. I keep looking at, what's going on in Texas right at the moment. And so many people are without power. And obviously there's all kinds of issues about Texas owning that grid and, challenges with that system, but also isn't there some really smart entrepreneur out there that is thinking about a way to kind of bridge what Texas wants and what we need to do for the consumer, actually?
Well, and it's a great question. The last recession, 7 or 8 of the largest companies in the world were founded during the last recession. And by the way, powering most of what we're doing today.
Yeah.
We're founded the last time we were, sort of hit with this. I think that the one thing I want to call out is there's still some 30 or 35 million, almost 10% of the population in the US does not have access to high-speed internet. And we're moving everything to this kind of work from anywhere, educate from anywhere, order food from anywhere, this kind of very digital human existence. And that leaves out a lot of people. And so, when I heard the stories about Texas, which I think is just, awful on so many levels, that people saying, wow, I don't have internet connection, I can't do all these things. And I was thinking in my head, 30% of this population has felt this every day for the last 12 months.
Yeah.
I don't have enough money for heat. I don't have enough money for air conditioning. I don't have enough money for high-speed internet. I don't have a car to drive me to the, what I'm saying? Like, so I think that, when I hear the term, let's get back to normal, I don't like that, because mm-hmm. I think where it's normal hard. Was is not what we should aspire to be. So to your point, what entrepreneur will, be listening to this podcast and say, what job needs to be done? What's the failover if this were to happen again? How do we mix green energy with oil and gas, because it's going to be a blended model for the next, couple of decades. And so how do we make that more interesting, from an innovation standpoint? And so that kind of whole jobs to be done concept, if you're mm-hmm. not familiar with it, was life-changing for me, because once I understood what that meant, I approached challenges and problems and opportunity completely differently.
And what do you think are the key things for people who are thinking about that today?
Yeah. So the job to be done sort of concept would be something like this. Okay. You're going to go to, your local hardware store and buy a drill. And then you're going to buy a drill bit. Mm-hmm. Do you want the drill and the drill bit, or do you want a quarter inch hole? Mm-hmm. The job to be done is the quarter inch hole, mm-hmm. according to the person who came up with jobs to be done. But I would almost argue that it isn't that you want the quarter inch hole. You actually want the shelf to be hung, or the desk to be built, or the cabinet to be put together, or the car fixed. That's the job to be done.
Yeah.
Not the drill, not the drill bit, not the hole. It's hanging the shelf.
Yeah.
Right?
And how do you get that? Right.
And how do you get that?
Yeah.
So if you say the job to be done would be, going back to the example we were just using, if there's a deep freeze and the power grid shows down, the job to be done would be, how do we get power to people more quickly? Like, that's the job to be done so that they can heat their home, blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm. It's not just, how do I modernize the power grid? You modernize the power grid for the job that needs to be done. And so approaching anything, if you're listening to this and you want to launch a new product, you want to enter a new market, you have a good idea, understand what is the job that is going to be done for
totally
you.
Totally agree.
And then you can back into, how do I solve that? Do I develop it on my own? Do I partner to deliver it? You know, even like thinking of the founding of Hint, it was like, what was the job to be done? I want to produce something that has no sugar and is healthy for you. And it gets, you know, stops me from drinking so much soda.
Right. Right.
Or pop, whatever you call it. So that was the job to be done. So you have to back into how to do that. So it's a great way to frame thinking during these times.
Yeah, I totally agree. Steve Jobs, I've said this a number of times on my podcast. He used to said, don't focus on asking the consumer what they need, just to actually solve problems. And if you just think about that and focus on what exactly is that issue, another way to say that, and you know, that problem, and then back out. So often though, you get stuck in, okay, well, I need a drill bit. I need this. Yes, maybe. But in addition, what is that problem that you're actually solving? And that's what I talk about, the key to entrepreneurism and starting any company, or whether it's a physical product or a service. I think it's just so, so key to, you know, don't get caught up in kind of all the little details.
And I'd say don't let the Steve Jobs quote intimidate you.
Yeah.
You know, you don't need to be Steve Jobs and know that there's going to be more smartphones on the planet than toothbrushes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you don't need to think out 10 or 50, you don't need to be Jeff Bezos or Mark Benioff or, you know, Richard Branson or Steve Case from AOL or, you know, whomever. You just need to want to think 18 to 24 months out. I mean, mm-hmm. you may be someone who can think out 10 or 15 years and, you know, God bless you, because, you know, you really disrupt markets and shape the way we do things. But if you just can stay in that 18 to 24 month window, you still can have tremendous impact. So it doesn't need to be something that completely transforms, you know, an industry like the iPod or the iPhone or, you know, any of those things. It absolutely can be something that is very niche, very specific, and very unique to you. So don't let the Steve Jobs thing intimidate you that you have to be him.
Totally agree. So great. Well, this is awesome, Tiffany. So where can people find you and talk to me a little bit more about your podcast as well?
So I'm pretty active on social. You can find me at Tiffany_Bova on Twitter, and you can find me on LinkedIn and Instagram and Facebook. I'm pretty active. And the podcast is What's Next with Tiffany Bova on sort of all the major platforms.
And it's really so good, everybody.
And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's a lot of fun. I get really fun and interesting people. And at the end of every podcast, I feel as if I've had a masterclass in whatever sort of topic we're talking about.
Love it.
And so that's the podcast. And then the book Growth IQ is for sale, you know, online pretty much everywhere. So
I love it. So it's so good. So thanks, everybody. Thank you, Tiffany, for coming on. And have a great rest of the week, everybody. We're here every Monday and Wednesday. And give Tiffany 5 stars and come back and visit us and all that kind of stuff. Thanks, everyone. Before we sign off, I want to talk to you about fear. People like to talk about fearless leaders, but achieving big goals isn't about fearlessness. Successful leaders recognize their fears and decide to deal with them head on in order to move forward. This is where my new book, Undaunted, comes in. This book is designed for anyone who wants to succeed in the face of fear, overcome doubts, and live a little undaunted. Order your copy today at undauntedthebook.com and learn how to look your doubts and doubters in the eye and achieve your dreams. For a limited time, you'll also receive a free case of Hint Water. Do you have a question for me or want to nominate an innovator to spotlight? Send me a tweet at Kara Golden and let me know. And if you like what you heard, please leave me a review on Apple Podcasts. You can also follow along with me on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn at Kara Golden. Thanks for listening.